You're listening to a podcast from Cancer.net. This cancer information website is produced by the American Society of Clinical Oncology, known as ASCO, the world's leading professional organization for doctors that care for people with cancer. In today's podcast, we'll be discussing the updated ASCO policy statement on genetic testing for cancer susceptibility, published in January 2010. This podcast will be led by Dr. Kenneth Offit, who is an author of the statement and the chief of the Clinical Genetics Service at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York. He is also a member of ASCO's Ethics Committee and a former member of ASCO's Cancer Prevention Committee. This Cancer.net podcast will help explain what this policy statement means for patients, and ASCO would like to thank Dr. Offit for joining us today.
My name is Dr. Kenneth Offit, and I am going to be speaking to you today about the ASCO policy statement update, genetic and genomic testing for cancer susceptibility. I took part in the formulation of this update as a member of ASCO's Ethics Committee and a former member of ASCO's Cancer Prevention Committee. This is actually the third statement in the area of genetics and genomics that has been issued by the American Society of Clinical Oncology. The first statement was way back in 1996, and this was just at about the time that the genes were first identified associated with a familial risk of common cancers. The BRCA genes are associated with breast and ovarian cancer, and those genes were first described around that period of time and were being brought into commercial use. Also, genes associated with forms of colon cancer, ovarian cancer, childhood cancers, all were coming into play just at about that time. ASCO convened a special task force to guide oncologists and also consumers about the most responsible way that this new genetic testing could be brought into clinical practice. That first ASCO statement in 1996 was in some ways controversial because there were individuals even in the field who thought it was premature to introduce, for example, breast cancer genetic testing. But we took a careful view of that matter, and in that statement advised that such testing could go forward if accompanied by appropriate informed consent, genetic counseling, and preferably in the setting of long-standing and ongoing research trials, longitudinal research trials. In fact, those trials came to exist. We actually called for the creation of these national registries in 1996. Those were created and funded by the National Cancer Institute. And in fact, our general call that genetic testing be made part of the practice of preventive oncology, this was a successful call. And in fact, in the late 1990s, more and more oncologists, those treating cancer, also became cancer prevention practitioners. Genetic testing was ordered in the oncology community, and ASCO led the way in developing educational areas to bring in genetic testing in a careful, responsible way to the public. We updated our statement in 2003, and we were concerned about a number of areas, and in almost every area that we voiced concern, extraordinary progress was made. In the area of genetic discrimination, we were worried that people may suffer because of their genetics. In fact, a law was passed and has just gone into effect in the last few months that protects individuals from discrimination by insurance carriers or their employers based on a genetic test or inheritance. Counseling came into play. We integrated the genetic testing into practice, and importantly, we called for third-party carriers, insurers, to pay for genetic testing, counseling, and sometimes surgeries. That also remarkably has taken place. So where are we, and why another statement? And there are a number of aspects to this current statement. I'll just emphasize one or two of those that I think are probably the most timely. There are actually 8 recommendations in the current statement, and many of these allude to prior recommendations and also cite significant progress that has been made. We continue to urge counseling and pre-test discussion of genetic testing, and we are continuing to emphasize the need for education, both of consumers as well as the healthcare providers of testing. But what we're dealing with in this current statement is a shift that has occurred in genetics, and that is why the phrase genomics is in the title. And what has happened in the last few years has been the discovery of a number of genetic markers of very low risk for cancer. These are not like the BRCA tests, where the risk could be 20 to 100 times increased. Here, the risk is barely elevated above 1.1, for example, not 50 or 100. What do you do with a risk marker that's so weak and yet so common? These risk markers can be seen in up to 30, 40, 50% of the population may have a risk marker in that range, that very, very small increase of risk. At the same time that these discoveries have been made, there's been a shift in the way genetic testing is being provided out of the hands of oncologists, in fact, out of the hands of healthcare professionals altogether, and in the hands of for-profit organizations who may employ individuals to provide testing. But those individuals don't have the same fiduciary classical responsibility to you as the patient. They work for a company who that derives a profit from the testing. And some questions have been made as to the different types of motivations that could exist and the different impact that could exist when the public enters into a genetic testing scenario with these types of direct-to-consumer companies. Some of these companies will send what are called spit kits to your home, and you can provide the saliva, and they will provide the test result with these new genomic tests, not the old-fashioned ones with high risk, but these new tests. So we go into some detail in the statement about this shift of model from what we call a professionally mediated to a non-professionally mediated delivery of information, and at the same time from tests where we know exactly what the medical implications are, which, for example, would be for a BRCA test leading to increased screening and prevention, to tests where there's completely unknown medical information as to what to do with that result. And this is what motivated us to look at this. And so we've come back in this statement to really emphasize the most fundamental principles of genetic testing that we feel should underlie genomic testing, and that is the emphasis on the process of informed consent by a professional mediating the process so as to most responsibly ensure the translation of this often complicated information now to a widening range of individuals in the population. We emphasize the importance of privacy and security, that when one enters into a genomic test in a clinical setting, in a research setting, one knows exactly what will happen with their personal information because this is documented in the process of informed consent. We urge in this statement that individuals seeking commercial testing are aware of the privacy and security provisions, that their information is not going to be used, for example, by these companies, which in some cases it appears it might be. We urge physicians to be aware of these new technologies, but at the same time, physicians can't be held responsible for genetic testing that they have not ordered, that their patients would have self-paid and provided, and which may not in any way have a proven medical utility. The final area that we address in this statement relates to the regulatory components. And looking back, I noticed that in 1996, in our first statement, we were very much aware of this concern that genetic testing was essentially not regulated by the current array of state and federal agencies that exist in this field. And this remains the case at the current time. And so we have a situation where genetic and now genomic testing does not have any seal of approval, as it were, or a stamp of efficacy, of accuracy from the FDA, for example, or any other federal body. While we were having these deliberations, another group, a federal advisory group, the Secretary's Advisory Commission on Genetics and Health and Society, also has been meeting, and they and we came to similar conclusions that it would be probably a very good time to have a national registry of genetic tests and genomic tests that the public could access, look at online to see which tests actually have a proven use. We call this clinical utility, an actual use. There's a real concern that without this type of information, that individuals may come to have false alarm and false reassurance from these types of tests that are delivered outside of a professionally mediated context. So the registry, and we have a detailed discussion of the regulatory aspects of this, and I would at this point compliment and thank the other members of this writing group. We hope that these guidelines will contribute to the growing dialogue regarding the most responsible way that all of us as members of society can bring the fruits of the Human Genome Project to the bedside and also to the preventive arena. In cancer, probably more, or certainly as much as heart disease or any other area, we have the opportunity to really gain a great reward by targeted prevention for those individuals at increased risk. And we hope that this statement, read by members of the general public as well as the practitioners within our own society, will continue this process of leading to the most responsible use of these technologies to better our families and patients' families who have been affected by cancer or are related to an individual affected by these diseases.
Thank you, Dr. Offit. More information about genetic testing can be found at www.cancer.net. Thank you for listening to this Cancer.net podcast.